Amen. Okay, so you are the brave souls willing to take a quarter with me on spiritual health and mental health. So what in the world are we doing this quarter together? So I'm not sure, maybe people are still coming in, but I thought we were going to have a full classroom this morning, but I don't know, maybe people chickened out. Okay, so talking about spiritual health, mental health. What are we covering this quarter? Okay, if we were going to be doing an evidences class, what might be the kind of topics and fields of study that might get brought up in an evidence class? Like, say, if Buddy Payne came to talk to us about design and creation, we might have what? Physics and biology, right? And like nanocars, right? Like he talked about paleontology, et cetera, et cetera. Okay. If this was a parenting class, and actually one of the components of the class ultimately is going to be on parenting with these things. So that is in fact what a lot of this is going to be. We would expect a lot of, we might say, practical wisdom, right? Practical wisdom of how to live out Bible principles. And my point with a lot of this is that's really what so much of this class is going to be, is what I believe to be practical wisdom of living out Bible principles. So this class, which is focusing on spiritual health and on mental health, will have some elements of psychology in it, but no more inappropriately, in my opinion, no more inappropriately than biology or nanocars or paleontology is in that context, right? We're talking about psychology as it relates to God's creation, psychology is talking about helping each other with our struggles, thinking better about how God helps us. So that's kind of the direction we're going with this. So what we're trying to do this quarter is trying to teach Bible principles and practical methods for wisdom. Wisdom in living out biblical principles. So obviously, the Bible is our guide. The Bible is the fundamentals of our worldview and everything. But most classes will be incorporating some elements of psychology, or at least what the secular world would label under the umbrella of psychology, that fits this Bible focus. Obviously, there's a lot of very bad psychology out there. You know, the 20th century was rife with, you know, bad psychology, thinking, Freudian elements that are not helpful, behavioralist elements out there, views of our mind and all of that. But what we learn is that God knows human nature. And God's the author of psychology. And we see reflections of this, of that wisdom, through his word. And so there might be direct verses like the Proverbs that we go, oh, that's straight up psychology. Or we might have a story that just, oh, that's a part of human nature, right? And so when you put it more in the category of, hey, we're going to have a class on human nature, you go, oh, cool. Yeah, that sounds good, right? Bible class. But calling it psychology, oh, that sounds dangerous. Well, our goal is really just to understand God, understand ourselves, the human nature, even our fallen nature here. So I think that what you'll find that we cover this quarter is mostly practical wisdom based on Bible concepts, the kind of advice that grandma might be able to give you. Grandma with wisdom, you know, not just like drink your mustard or something, but legitimate practical advice that would be useful for us. Here's another way to say this. This worked out well, right? I just talked about Solomon and the two prostitutes who come to him with the baby issue, and Solomon says to cut the baby in half. So if Solomon utilized knowledge of human nature in his wisdom, right? Interestingly, it mentions that Solomon knew about plants and animals, right? And he had a zoo and all of that. But the great story we remember of Solomon's wisdom is about his knowledge of human nature. And you could call that psychology, right? Of how would a real mother respond in that situation. So that's our aim for this quarter, is to learn more about how God made us, human nature, wisdom, Bible approach on topics that the world would put under the umbrella of psychology. I would put under the psychology as well. But that's kind of the goal with all of this. So psychology, what is it good for? Psychology is very good at describing how people tend to think, people tend to behave, or how people tend to fall apart, or how people tend to improve, or things like that, right? How people tend to think, how they tend to behave. But psychology is really very useless for describing how people should behave, right? That's a moral statement or an ethical statement, and that's where the world, you know, really, really struggles. And so that's, of course, what the world does. The world takes psychology and says, well, this is how people should be able to behave or not. And we say, no, that's not how it works. Okay, so let me give a couple just examples of that. So data, there's going to be some psychology data that psychologists compiled. Some percentage, whatever the percentage, and that's going to be a very difficult figure to actually nail down, but 7% of people have same-sex attraction, right? What we would call homosexual attraction. Okay, from that data of whatever accurate or inaccurate percentage, what is the world going to do with that kind of data point?
So we call it
diversity. If it's a really high percentage, they go, oh, actually it's normal, natural, right? It can't be that bad, right? That's just how the world's going to treat a psychology. Here's how people tend to behave. Well, then they must be okay. Well, the Christian, that's not a response to that data point, right? Our response might be something like, are we that concerned about the numbers?
Yeah.
The number of people who want to do something doesn't really matter if God's told us not to do it. You know, the numbers are kind of irrelevant. Now, that gives us perspective, but in terms of it being right or wrong, if God says not to do it, we shouldn't do it. Okay, another example. Pornography warps your brain, destroys you. It's the new drug. It's toxic, okay? So the world is not keen to learn that data point. I don't see them celebrating that data point. What's the world's response? Honestly, what do you think the world's response is when they find that pornography is a poison? Yeah, I mean, it's your poison, right? Well, that's interesting. Well, that's unfortunate, but I mean, who really cares? Yeah, it just is what it is. Okay. Now, obviously, you have kind-minded people who see that and say, "Oh, we should keep kids away from that." But I think you understand what Jenny was saying. Okay, the Christian though says they see this data that pornography warps your brain. And well, what do you think a Christian response to that? Probably going to be
consequence of sin.
Yeah. God was really wise to keep us from that poison, right? That is a poisonous thing, and look at God's wisdom, you know, in that. So that's kind of my perspective coming at from that. So in one long sentence,
hey,
here.
Could I?
Yeah.
Make a comment on that because I'm reading this, and you said psychology is useless, and my first thing that popped in my head. Well, I wouldn't say it's useless. I would say it helps us to be aware and understand the tendencies.
Sure.
And
yeah.
It helps us to fight those tendencies to transform into what God wants us to be. So that awareness is really important to us, actually.
No, I agree with that. I absolutely agree with that. In fact, that's what a lot of this class is going to be, is just awareness. When I say describing how people should behave.
Right.
Is like
it doesn't tell us how to behave.
Yes.
But it's definitely helpful in helping us to control and mold to how we should behave.
Yes.
We can understand the tendencies that we need to fight against. So that homosexual one, that's not necessarily unusual, and we probably need to do a good job of helping our children to understand that as they grow up, that could happen. It's a tendency. Doesn't mean it's the right thing to do. God still tells us the right thing to do, and you need to shape and mold to that.
Yes. Yeah, I absolutely agree with that, yeah. And that's really what I'm getting at. I say it's very good at describing how people tend to think, tend to behave, how they tend to grow, what can help, you know. And so when I'm counseling guys, I give them all kinds of practical tips. Habit stacking. Well, that's a nice little term. I think it's from Atomic Habits. Learned that. But it's like, well, just like that will help you a lot if you just do that. Do they listen to you? Well, no, probably not. But, you know, that will help us start new habits. that's just kind of that grandma type of wisdom. Look, you're going to check Facebook. So read your Bible before you check Facebook, because you're going to remember that you want to check Facebook. Oh yeah, I'll do this thing over here I'm trying to learn, and then I'll do Facebook. That kind of habit stacking. I believe in that. That to me sounds like wisdom in human nature. That I think is very good. Was there another hand here? Okay, so in a long sentence, here's our goals for the quarter. Using Bible principles, our goal is to help Christians, number one, think better, number two, be more Christ-like in our emotions, number three, improve Christian relationships. Long sentence, but one, think better is the cognitive, two, be more Christ-like in our emotions, more the body side, improve relationships, that's the relationship side, the social side. So here's some sub-points to that. Learning more how we function. I mean, psychology is a huge, huge field. People say this their whole life. We've got like 22 classes, so we're not going to cover everything. But more how we function. Address some things that enslave us. Learn how to help ourselves and how to help others in this broken world. Open our eyes to the challenges that we face in today's world, particularly, what are challenges for us and for teens and things like that, and be moving towards greater courage, faith, love, hope, joy, and peace. To be growing in those areas. So that's kind of the goal of the quarter, is to help us in these kinds of ways. So in terms of an outline of the quarter, here's kind of the five categories. We're going to start and have several classes on how God made us. Put that up here on the board. That's going to be our focus for a little while, of just how God made us. And then how we struggle, talk about how we tend to fall into the pit and why some of those things are hard. Number three, how we're failing, what are the practical things that are going on right now in our world. And then talk about how God helps us and how we help each other. So that's kind of the goal of what we'll try to cover. Again, we just don't have tons of time here. And we're offering this again second quarter, but we're going to get most of the same material second time through. Okay, here's my personal background for this. Obviously, it's a subject that I'm interested in. That'd be clear for me wanting to teach this class. So I'm not a medical professional. We have a medical professional in the field, actually, in this room. I'm not a licensed therapist. And Tara, I don't know if that's your technical category yet either.
Not yet.
But something along those lines. I'm just a preacher with baggage is the area that I find myself in. But because I'm a full-time preacher, what that enables me to do is a lot of what I would call, what the world calls actually, sorry, I should say what the world calls pastoral counseling. And what that practically really means is that a lot of people I talk to, mostly young men, mostly about OCD, that's obsessive compulsive disorder, we could do a whole class on that. We could do a whole year on that. Obviously, we're not going to do much on that. But that pastoral counseling allows me as a preacher with Bible principles in a Bible context to be having conversation with people. I don't get any money from it. It wouldn't be pastoral counseling, I don't think, if I was getting money from it. But lots of conversations, mostly young men, mostly with guys with OCD. So let me just give you a snapshot of my life right now with this. You may not be aware, because I don't just publicize this, but part of my work right now there's seven people that I talk to on a weekly basis, counseling them with OCD or anxiety. And I've had people, obviously, who have done well and we're not having to talk regularly. I've got one person that might be giving me a call soon because his buddy's one I talk to, and he's like, hey, can I tell him to talk to you? So right now I got seven people on a weekly basis those are very much OCD anxiety focused. One guy I talked to with a pornography problem. So he has anxiety, and I'm struggling to figure out how to tackle that while also the raging other problem as well. There's five people that I have occasional contact with, and I might this week with Julianne talk to one of those moms. You know, that's more of like once or twice a year conversation that we talk occasionally. I have one recent graduate in the past 2-3 months. We talked a lot last year, and he's doing a lot better. And so graduate's not the right term. We didn't have a ceremony. He didn't get a pamphlet, a brochure, a certificate, but we don't talk anymore. So one of that. So you think, well, why in the world are you talking to people about OCD? Because I have OCD. So clinically, my OCD is in remission, which is a whole nother subject that to me is very interesting. But clinically in remission, at its worst, it was very, very severe. But through years of counseling and therapy, then I've learned a lot. And I, of course, am active in then trying to pass that blessing on to others and counsel others. So what that means is my realm of specialty, what I consider my specialty, what I feel very comfortable counseling people with, disagreeing with the experts, blah, blah, blah. That's a very narrow field of the anxiety OCD. I just haven't studied all kinds of subjects. But I will say I've had enough depression issues to have opinions about that too, even though that's not as much my field of specialty. But don't worry, this class is not going to be about me. This is not going to be the JD semester of all these things. So so that's my personal background. I think that needs to be said. First of all, I'm not giving you medical advice, but also what my area of what I consider my specialty to be, my what I think are my most informed opinions, etc. Is that a hand? No. Okay. Okay, so let's jump into basically under the umbrella of how God made us. We're going to be talking about, don't get intimidated, the biopsychosocial spiritual model of mental health. Okay, you're smiling and laughing. You mock my pain. Okay. The biopsychosocial spiritual model of mental health. Okay, so it's really interesting is that this approach, and not the spiritual part, the biopsychosocial approach to mental health has been really growing in recent years, popping up in various disciplines, and that's a biopsychosocial model for dealing with people's dysfunction. I see that as very biblical. So, for example, when Rosie went through the cognitive behavioral therapy pain treatment at Dayton's Children last year for her fibromyalgia, and she's talking with medical psychologist in the pain program, and some really cool things, really interesting things with that, they taught a biopsychosocial model for pain. And you're like, well, if pain has a biopsychosocial thing to it, then probably a lot of other things do as well. One of the homework we'll have this quarter is a lecture by Dr. Yapko, who is a depression expert, not a believer that I can tell. What does Dr. Yapko talk about? A biopsychosocial model for depression. So I see that as very biblical, and that's the basis of where we're going with this. So we're going to spend a few classes just thinking this through and seeing the biblical wisdom behind this model. Now, you can see I'm going back and forth between biopsychosocial, but then also the biopsychosocial spiritual. We'll talk about that. So we'll get there. Don't think I'm ruling out the spiritual. That's of course not the point. But our basic point is that this is how God made us. And that's why in this category, how did God make us, we can do a better job of thinking biblically in a biopsychosocial spiritual perspective. The big questions we're going to be addressing here is this really biblical? I mean, JD says it is. JD's talking about these fields of psychology, especially a cognitive behavioral approach that is a biopsychosocial model. Well, is that biblical? I think it is. You're free to disagree. And so we'll talk about that. And then secondly, how do we incorporate the spiritual into the biopsychosocial? You can maybe guess how we're going to tackle that. So when we talk about biopsychosocial, that mouthful, what's the bio part of that? Biology, but more precisely, what is it getting at here? Your physical, your body, right? Your body's, so that would include things like genetics, your brain, your hormones, etc. Right? So that's the bio, is body things, observable things, right? If I chop off this part of your brain, what happens? You know, if I inject you with testosterone and you get rage filled, you know, those kinds of things. Okay. What's the psycho part here, do we think? Maybe your mental, yeah. And I think precisely our thinking and our thoughts, and thinking rationally versus irrationally, motivation, you know, that kind of idea. So we've got the body part of us and then the thinking part of us. What we're going to see is there's tons of overlap, right? But you know, bear with me. And the social part, does this mean you go to parties or not? Is that what the social means? No. Now, what's maybe, how would we maybe say the word here? Relationship, right? Relationships with people living, with people who may be dead, your relationship with God, et cetera, et cetera. So the point is that God made us as biopsychosocial creatures, biopsychosocial spiritual creatures. And so here's my attempt to just visualize how dynamic those things are. This is the idea here, of course, is the body with your thinking. That's the thought bubble, right? That's connected, and then person to person, and then person's affecting our thinking, and you know, all of that. Other people here specifically affecting our body and affecting our thinking. So in reality, sometimes it's very hard to isolate one of these things from the other two. To really say, well, that's purely a relationship thing. Is that purely a biological thing? They're all very, very connected. Our thinking very much impacts our body. Our thinking very much impacts our relationships, right? Our sense of relationship. Our sense of relationship very much impacts our thinking. Am I really? Oh, yeah, yeah. Your relationships very much impact your thinking. Your relationships very much impact your body. Your body very much impacts your thinking, and your body very much impacts your sense of relationship. So all these are very critical, and that's just how God made us. Now, again, you may disagree with that, but that, I think that's the most biblical way to think about mental health. And I'm pleased to see that thinking showing up in, modern psychology in practical ways. So what we find in the Bible is this is exactly how God has made us. We are mind and body, right? We have a soul or a spirit. We have flesh. What are some Bible passages that come to mind that talk about this physical and non-physical part of us, mind, body, soul, spirit versus our flesh? What are some Bible verses that come to mind?
Before we go, could I make a comment on this?
Sure. The slide or the previous slide?
No, it doesn't even know where it is.
Okay.
What's running through my brain?
Is through your brain, or is it running through your mind?
Well,
okay. No. But that's actually telling what you just said, running through my brain. But we'll go there.
Well, remember, as an engineer, right? And I look back, and I think in some ways this model actually is contrary to what a pure scientist wants us to believe around evolution, and that we're nothing more than just cells that came together.
Correct.
Right. So
correct.
In some ways, this science that's kind of become is contradicting the, I don't want to say common belief, because I don't even think it's common anymore. I think it's just the loudest
local
belief.
The materialistic presentation.
Yes.
Yeah.
Of how we got here through evolution.
Yes.
Right. It completely contradicts that, because this would say there is no other part of it. It's all about just the cells.
Correct.
Evolution.
Yes.
And the physical.
Yes. As one evolutionist put, we are thinking pieces of meat, right?
Yes.
We're just a computer, except instead of hardware of metal, it's hardware of human tissue.
It's just interesting to me to see these different branches of, quote, science, and how vastly different the conclusions are that they come to.
Yes.
And how they kind of really contradict themselves.
Yes. The fact that we would say there's a non-material part of ourselves. Well, wait. I only believe in molecules. You know. So that idea. Absolutely.
I guess my point is, I think that this model gives credence and more to us in understanding the creation and how God made us. It's not simply cells.
Yes.
It's much more complicated, and really, I wouldn't say complicated, it's much more
holistic, sophisticated, intertwined. Yes, yes. Absolutely.
Very different than the animal world.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. So Bible passages that kind of talk about, just in terms of this mind and body together. Yes.
Love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength.
Okay, very good. With kind of every part of you, right? The whole man is emotional, thinking, acting. Very good. Jesus said, the spirit is willing, but the flesh is weak. Paul said in Galatians 5, the spirit and the flesh war against each other. What's that?
Oh, I was just going to say fruit of the spirit.
Okay.
It's spirit versus flesh, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So if you just do what your body wants you to do, that's, you're going to get on a lot of bad roads. That's the flesh, just doing what you want to do. But there's a higher part of us that has a greater thinking. What was the other one I was thinking?
Well, the passage in Romans, right, and that we just went through, where Paul goes through great detail of talking back and forth about what his mind wants to do and what his
yes.
body ends up doing.
Yes.
And that battle. And that.
I keep doing that what I don't want to do.
Yeah.
Why do I not do what I do want to do? Yeah, wretched man that I am. It's this human nature, right? Absolutely, yeah. I'm not of the opinion that we, some people are going to disagree with me, people to really soundly differentiate between mind, heart, soul, and spirit, like this is the box that's the soul, this is the box of the spirit. I'm just not sure we're given enough information to parse that out. Is there a distinction that's sometimes made? 1 Thessalonians 5, may your whole mind and, what is it, your soul and spirit, I should look that up. Are there different distinctions made? Yes. Are we getting enough information to parse that out? I suspect not. But we get the general idea, right? Kendra, did you have a hand?
Yes. I was also thinking how, like, your body is a temple. I don't know if that mm-hmm. really relates, but...
It does. I mean, ultimately, now, are we ever going to figure out exactly how that works? No, but it does relate, because we have things that influence us, right? So a spirit of harlotry is from Hosea, or an alcoholic spirit that we put into us that influences me, impacts my mind, impacts my body. Well, we want to be controlled by Christ. We want to be controlled by the gospel. So again, you have this sense of I'm thinking and I'm going to choose to behave in a certain way with that. Yeah, just, yes.
Another one that just came to mind on the social side of it, thinking about the, I'll look for my quote pastoral counselor to help me with this. The cords and how you got, you know, when you're there, the part that we talk about with the relationship and the need to, and I think I'm blending the multiple ideas here, but I'm thinking about the two being together and keeping
yes,
warm.
Yes, and a three-strand cord is not yes. easily broken.
Yeah,
yes.
The relationship yeah. part of this as well, there's plenty of biblical examples
yes.
that
oh.
help us to understand the need we have to not just, and I think we all got it during 2022, we can't just sit at home and not be social with one another. There's a part of us that's missing.
Yes.
And
yeah.
We felt it very quickly.
Yeah, absolutely. And the person who says, I just need a hug, that's a physical, relational thing that's very helpful, right? And that helps our thinking, right? Okay, so we see all, right.
yeah.
all that. Good, good.
Can
the
I,
first...
Can I make one?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, great.
So I call it the whole person mm-hmm. concept. And when you're talking about trying to differentiate them, one thing I put in there is ethical, and then putting spiritual as the center. Because people who don't have a spiritual base don't necessarily understand that those are all related. And the ethical part is, you know, a differentiating between right and wrong, the principles of right and wrong. And they get that. They don't see the spiritual part, whereas all of it is based on the spiritual component. So
yeah.
that would be helpful.
Yes, yeah, and I'm not sure the best model for all this. Like I said, part of it, what we're going to do is, so how does the spiritual connect to the biopsychosocial mm-hmm. piece of it? Ultimately, no surprise where I'm going is the spiritual is not a separate thing. It's infused in all three. You know, like dye in the Play-Doh that's just inseparable to it. But in some ways, it is a separate thing. So I'm not sure the best model for that, other than to say that spiritual principles help the bio and the psycho and the social. The 1 Thessalonians 5, he says, may your whole spirit and soul and body be kept blameless. So they're making a distinction, but are we going to figure out all that's meant by that? I don't think so. Is the Bible's terminology consistent from Genesis to Revelation on that? I don't think so, but you may disagree, and you're welcome to. The Bible tells us that as a person, I have a physical part of me and a non-physical part of me. Right now, we're just kind of talking about the mind-body thing. My thinking's connected to my brain, but it's more than my brain. Can I impact your thinking by smacking your brain? Yes, by putting chemicals in, yeah, by putting chemicals in your brain. Yes, by putting electrodes in your brain. Yes, but your thinking is more than just your brain. You are more than your brain, and so you know that idea. And so when Jason said, and trust me, I've had this analogy before. You said it. We say this is what's running through my brain. That is true, but it's also fair to say that's what's running through my mind because they're very connected, right? They're not the same. The materialist, the evolutionist would say, your mind is nothing more than your brain. Whereas we say, no, there's a part of me that's more than my body, you know, that whole idea. I'm a soul, I have a mind, etc. So I'm not only body and spirit, material and immaterial, but God has also made me to need other people. So the biocycle plus the social. From beginning to end, the Bible emphasizes our need for good human relationships. And what I think you'll see as we go forward the next few weeks, that I think this is the category that is probably the most neglected piece of it. It's not good for Adam. It was not good for Adam to be alone. It's not good for us to be alone. You weren't born alone, right? You were given a family. You have connections to your mother that are emotional and are biological. You were raised to adulthood by people and all these things. So any psychology or counseling that doesn't deal with all the components of how God made us is going to be insufficient. Obviously, we're going to be incorporating the spiritual as well. But just in terms of how God made us, we want to make sure we're addressing these. We want to treat the whole person, right? We have biological factors. We have cognitive thinking factors. And we have relationship factors that are impacting all of us all the time. Constantly. So that's really how God made us. Okay. So let me just run through this very quickly. There's not time at all. This would take all quarter to go through. But biological influences, your genetics, you know, how your genes, how you were made. Diet, nutritional deficiencies are would be put in the biological category. Drugs, obviously, or medicine would be in the biological category. Hormones, right? Trust me, they're real. So I put here cortisol, for example. Do you know what time of day your cortisol, that's your stress hormone. Do you know what time of day your cortisol is the highest? In the morning. This helps you get out of bed, right? At night, you're like, I want to rest. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So cortisol is lowest at night because you're like ready to crawl into bed and calm down. In the morning, God gives us a body that pumps up our cortisol. So some people experience their anxiety is highest in the morning. And by the night, it's better because their cortisol is you know, helping them versus hindering them or something like that. Women, of course, have more of a monthly pattern of hormones, whereas men can have more of a daily, 24-hour pattern of hormones. So those are just real impacts. Exercise, of course, influences our mental health. Sleep impacts our mental health. Sunlight, right? That's even in the book of Ecclesiastes. Light is sweet. It is pleasant for the eyes to see the sun. So even Ecclesiastes mentions sunlight's good for us. You know, so those are all, we'd say, biological things. Okay, psychological thinking influences. Personality, your preferences, right? Just how you tend to think about things. Your mental associations, your history.
5-minute warning.
Going to that part of town stresses me out because that's where they stole my car. Or going back home to my parents' house is pleasant because of those associations. Cognitive distortions, we'll talk about those. That's where we're not thinking rationally and we're thinking improperly. Habits, right? Thinking habits, for example, are thinking. Cognitive rigidity versus, and this is a mouthful, flexible and effective problem-solving skills. So rigid versus flexible, right? Reason for hope, like placebo, or the opposite, losing your will to live. Fascinating things in all of that. Social influences, how you learn to handle things from your parents, what stressed your parents out, right? How you learn to handle things from your friends, culture, TV. So, for example, when we assigned the Dr. Yapko video, he's going to talk about that research is showing that depression is far more social than it is biological. We learn depression, and depression is contagious. And so how we learn to handle those things. Secure attachments from your parents, right? Were you loved? Were you not loved? Were relationships helpful, stabilizing? That's the word I use with a lot of guys, is it's clear that that relationship is not a stabilizing relationship. When you talk to your mom, she stresses you out, you have a rough day. Well, I think it's because that social need, instead of that relationship stabilizing and encouraging you, it's destabilizing and throws you off. It's upsetting, right? We'll talk about our top 10 relationships being good and stabilizing. Friendships that you can rely on, right? If you have friends who can help you, that's very stabilizing, right? Versus, I'm poor, my car just broke down, I don't know how to fix it, I don't know how to solve this problem, no one I know is gonna help me out, that's very stressful as opposed to helpful. Friendships that heal shame, right? We need friendships to help us through shame, good godly, positive things. So I hope I'm giving you at least a sampling of different things that affect our mental health that are not just thinking, not just biological, not just social. Here's my question as we wrap this up. Of these three, as we think about this, the biopsychosocial, which do you think the world tends to overlook the most, and which do you think tends to get the most attention from the world? Before you answer that, let me rephrase some of this. The biological focus would say, sorry that's small, but you need to fix your body and your brain and your chemistry and your hormones and your diet. A psychological focus would be you need to fix your thinking and you need better information, right? Your thinking needs to improve. And social is you need to improve your relationships. Okay, this is just an opinion question. Which do you think the world tends to emphasize that our biggest need is in mental health things?
Emphasize.
Okay, you said social?
I would say, if it's emphasizing, yeah. I would say biological.
Biological. I would agree with that. I think in general, the world says it's mostly biological stuff, right? What's that?
Like it's genetic.
Exactly. Yeah, genetic and, improve your diet. Here's some herbal supplements and get your exercise and everything will work out. Okay. And then... which, and Amy, you were answering, which was actually the first question.
Overlook.
Yeah, overlook. And you're saying the world overlooks the social piece of it. We agree? Mm-hmm. Agree with that? Sure, that's probably the case. Okay, now here's the more dangerous question. Of these three, which do you think Christians tend to overlook the most, and which of these three do you think that Christians tend to pay the most attention to?
That's a good question.
It's an opinion question. The thinking, okay, how we think. Anyone think that Christians minimize the biology part?
Yes.
You think Christians tend to minimize the social part?
I think they overlook all of it.
Yeah. I think in general, when we take the class to look at Jeremiah, look at Job, look at the Psalms, I think what we're going to be surprised to see is the social piece of it that is louder and more visible than anything else. So, okay.
When you say social part of it, you mean...
relation. Like, yeah.
It's overlooked more?
No, I mean that what hurt Jeremiah the most was the social.
Oh, okay. That's
what hurt Job the most, that kind of thing.
See, I feel like what we just do is tell everybody, come to church. And just come to church and that'll fix everything. Right, just come be together with everybody, and we don't talk about some of the other things that are maybe fundamental and foundational that need to be addressed as well.
So the come to church
I think of that as social. I think of that as if you join together with the group, you're going to have people
okay.
around you, and that'll make everything better.
Okay. Or they could be meaning, you need to hear some things that you need to think differently about.
Well, that could be
so. So in terms of like teaching, right? Here's the homework. The slides worked out. I got right to the homework. I want you to think about the mind-body connection before Wednesday. List at least 5 ways that mind affects the body, thinking affects the body, and list at least 5 ways that the body affects the mind. I know that Google can help you if you get stuck on that assignment. But be thinking about the mind-body connection of how thinking affects the body and how the body affects our thinking. And obviously we'll be talking about other dynamics here as well. But the Bible just has a lot to say about the mind-body connection. For example, Proverbs 17:22. A joyful heart is good medicine. Crushed spirit dries up the bone. Now, you can use that. You can use that. I gave it away. But there's at least one good one. So the homework for Wednesday is just the mind-body connection stuff. And we'll talk more about it. Like I said, the next few classes we're talking just about how God made us as biopsychosocial spiritual creatures. Okay, thank you all.